Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today, we're talking about the challenges of customer onboarding silos that are plaguing retailers. To delve into this further, I'm joined by Sunil Naidu, CEO and founder of Instant, and Jennifer Pitt, Senior Analyst of Fraud and Security at Javelin Strategy Research. They're going to explore the strategies for seamlessly offering multiple products and services without redundant signups. And they're also going to uncover the transformative advantages of leveraging verifiable credentials and decentralized ID systems, unlocking a world of efficiency and trust in this ever-changing digital landscape. Sunil, to start things off, what are customer onboarding silos that retailers are experiencing?
Yeah, traditionally, each retailer has different lines of business, organizations that produce different products. As an example, if you look at a bank, a retail bank, there's an organizational unit or a line of business for the checking account and savings account, which is different from the line of business that handles loans and mortgages, for example. And each line of business silo basically has its own toolbox for risk and compliance, comprising half a dozen or more different vendor tools, data broker tools, etc., that they use in some sort of orchestration blueprint in order to vet people who are signing up for that particular product or service and to KYC them for compliance purposes. So the consequence of this is that I could sign up for a checking account at that bank today and have to go through the whole signup flow and KYC checks and fraud checks and so on. And then 6 weeks later, I come back to the same institution and try to open up a loan, for example, a loan account. And the same bank would ask me for the same bunch of information all over again, despite the fact that I already have a relationship in that bank. And, you know, obviously, different products have different levels of assurance of risk, which is kind of one of the underlying drivers for these operational silos. But there's a lot of advantages to sort of spanning the silos, if you will, with a technology that allows each silo the independent risk and compliance management requirements that they may have. Each line of business may have their own without having to, you know, have one ring to rule them all. Give them that flexibility to maintain independent control, but yet unify the user experience by giving the user a kind of reusable, verifiable credential.
And Sunil, that's a great explanation of, you know, the silos and that. Just to piggyback on that, we get a lot of reports that consumers are not happy with onboarding processes, that they take too long, that you know, they always say, I thought I already gave you my information. Why do I keep having to give you this information? So that really speaks to what you're saying. And being able to have one place where that information is kept, you know, on the consumer's device, and the consumer can kind of dictate how they give that information, not only can help the consumer, but it can also save time for businesses trying to onboard people and trying to get consumers to the correct line of business or any line of business.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that notion. The problem is kind of exacerbated, by the way, because of the demographic shift, as you're aware. Young people and people generally living today, we live in an on-demand economy where we can rent things with a touch of a button without having to buy them. Airbnb, Uber, etc., just simple examples. But as a result of the change in the kind of nature of the way we interact with the economy, young people, millennials, Generation Z, Gen A, etc., they have different behavioral signals than Gen X, baby boomers, etc., who have essentially been used to model credit behavior and the underlying infrastructure that enables businesses to onboard their customers. So, you know, someone really needs to rethink this kind of infrastructure with a notion of less friction for the user and easier onboarding user experiences.
To add to that, Sunil, how can businesses frictionlessly sell multiple products and services without, you know, the repeated signups that can leave customers somewhat frustrated?
Yeah, thankfully, over the last couple of years, the W3C has ratified a couple of standards. One of them is called verifiable credentials. Another is called decentralized ID, which is based on the notion of the blockchain. These two technologies combined enable businesses to issue reusable passes, if you will, to customers who sign up. So in the example I gave earlier, if I were to come in and open up that checking account, I might get a pass back, which essentially is a tokenized identity document that includes information in the document itself that helps to identify and non-repudiate who I am, and also contains assurances from the verifying authority that issued that document that the information has been vetted and verified to a degree of level of assurance of risk. And there's also a know your customer verification component to it, so that from a compliance perspective, the presenter of that pass has passed the necessary KYC, know your customer sanctions and sanctions lists and other types of checks that have to happen. All of that's intrinsically bound into the pass. And then the decentralized ID protocol basically helps prove the ownership of the document so that the recipient of the pass that's evaluating that user can be assured that that data in the pass belongs to the user that's presenting the pass, and no one else could have stolen that pass or modify the contents of that pass on the fly. These two technologies basically enable a user to come in, get that pass when that checking account is opened, and then when they come back and they either want to log into the checking account, they can present the pass again as the authentication token in lieu of a password. And if when they want to access other products or services like the loan or other products that the bank's trying to upsell to that customer, they can gain access to those additional products and services without having to go through the whole sign-up flow and KYC check and fraud check over again by simply representing the pass. So long as the level of assurance of the issued pass matches the requirement of the product or service they're trying to access, they'll just get one-click access into the system.
And that's what we see a lot from financial institutions, is they actually talk about KYC and the difficulties with actually verifying someone's identity. You know, you have name changes, somebody gets married, divorce, address changes, you know, just like you were talking about, the thicker credit files depending on the generation. If there's actually incorrect information, resolving that takes a while. And so we need technology. We need something that is more of a more streamlined way to actually resolve or verify that identity. And you were bringing up, you know, the idea that resolving that identity, somebody can't use that identity. They essentially can't steal that identity because it's this verifiable credential. That can definitely be beneficial with fraud of all types, specifically identity fraud and synthetic identity fraud. If somebody has to present a credential that has already been verified, it obviously makes it more difficult for a second person to use that same credential or part of that same credential. So it can definitely cut down on the amount of identity fraud, because a lot of different frauds, unfortunately, account takeover fraud, new account fraud are on the rise. And this would definitely help curb that.
Absolutely. And that's the advantage with the kind of maturity of the technology. It's as strong as multi-factor authentication, but unlike other technologies like passphrases and passkeys and multi-factor authentication in itself, it's fully decentralized. There is no central point of attack for some hacker or bad actor to go and compromise a database and steal all of our data and authenticating tokens. All of that risk goes away because the technology ensures that the credential is in possession of the end user, securely vaulted into their mobile devices, with very mature mechanisms to essentially cancel a pass from a device that might have been lost or stolen.
And I can see how that can be beneficial for combating SIM swaps. We've seen an increase in SIM swaps where customers' phone number gets compromised. They contact that suspect, contacts the phone company, basically takes over the device of the person and can bypass multi-factor authentication. We're seeing that a lot with bank contacts, as that person can bypass the multi-factor authentication needed to authenticate somebody, a caller, that they are the actual account holder. And so I can see how that can really combat SIM swaps if what we're saying is they would physically have to have that device. And if they have that device, the consumer can essentially then cancel that identity or validation if it's taken. So
that's exactly right. And the beauty of the technology is it's omni-channel. So the person can be authenticated and vetted consistently, whether the customer is calling into a call center or whether they're accessing the application through the web or at retail locations at kiosks. So the technology kind of gives the business a bit greater assurance that someone may be using social engineering or other mechanisms to attack the call center, pretending to be that individual in order to set the call forward on their profile, and then get things like push notifications or essentially be able to do things like SIM swaps to get those notifications themselves. This technology essentially thwarts all of those kind of attack vectors.
So Neil, you touched upon this a bit earlier, but you know, for those especially that are tuning in, can you speak to some of the benefits of using verifiable credentials and decentralized ID?
Yeah, we combine the use in a product we're launching called MultiPass. But in essence, the heavy lifting happens behind the scenes. The process works like this. You're a financial institution. You have a mobile application. You can drop load a toolkit. We provide a toolkit for free that basically allows the MultiPass issuance and verification capabilities to now be embedded in your application. It also provides a secure mobile vault for any passes that have been issued to the user. So all you essentially do is drop load this toolkit into your application, and then you have the full capabilities. When the user is first registered and onboarded, either in line in that user journey, at the end of the journey, the user will be presented with a prompt and a consent request asking if they wish to receive the pass and store it. They just click yes on the consent request. Behind the scenes, the system issues the pass with the data that was collected from the user that went through identity verification, fraud checks, KYC checks, and whatnot. Any additional information, such as the bank account of the user or other useful piece of information that the financial institution might need later on, can also be packaged up into the pass. The pass is then signed with two sets of keys, one that belongs to the actual user receiving the pass, and the other that is issued from the business that's done the verification of the data in the pass, in this case, Instant. Behind the scenes, Instant also uses the DID protocol, and we employ the blockchain. We're blockchain agnostic, but we use Hyperledger Open today, and we basically escrow the public key belonging to the user's key pair that was used to sign that pass by the user, as well as our own public key, Instant's public key. Both of those are escrowed into the blockchain, and the URL of the escrowed certificates, in essence, are embedded in the document. So as soon as that document is presented back to the same business, to a different line of business, for example, for another product or service, or even to a completely different brand where that pass is presentable, the recipient of the pass can now look at the pass. And in the pass itself is contained all the necessary information required to non-repudiate the pass and verify that it's not been altered or modified. And the DID protocol is used to essentially match the public record of the public keys of the key pairs that were used to do the signature and the encryption of the data in the pass. So by virtue of the blockchain being immutable, you get the assurance that this pass was in fact issued to Sunil, for example, by Acme Bank or whomever issued it, and that all of the data in there was verified by Instant. That assurance is intrinsically built in, using the verifiable credentials document and the DID protocol. And then obviously the business can decrypt the document, and within the bounds of the consent, and the data is decrypted automatically by the technology, and the underlying pieces of data that's required by the bank in order to go establish the account or authenticate the user, et cetera, that's just simply made available on the fly. So the financial institution no longer has to store that data in the database, and thereby they do not have to take on the cyber liability risk of and reputational harm of being hacked and that data stolen, while maintaining all of their existing fraud prevention, identity verification, and KYC compliance processes in place. But from the user's perspective, they've simply clicked a consent request saying, yes, I want to share the pass, or I want to take the pass. And that's as far as the friction goes from the user's perspective. They just get into the application, assuming obviously they've passed the KYC checks and the identity verification checks, which granted them the pass in the first place.
And just to piggyback on what you were saying, kind of offline, we were talking about the benefits of consumers actually having control. And you mentioned briefly about, you know, privacy and how we can combat data breaches with this technology, essentially. But privacy, I kind of want to just touch on that real quick. It's a very important issue for our consumers. We found that consumers will actually cancel their bank accounts if their privacy concerns are not met. And so that is a huge concern on their mind. And essentially giving back control to the consumer about what can be done with their data, how their data can be used, when it's deleted, essentially, is a great thing. There are many privacy laws in the United States and other countries. Some of them conflict, they're varied, and not every state has them. And so I think with something, you know, like this, it's really easy to put all those privacy laws really in perspective, and there's no conflict with that. It basically appeals to the most restrictive privacy law in place, which is, you know, giving the user, again, the ability to choose how they store their data, collect their data, use their data, share their data, and delete their data. So great.
That's That's actually absolutely right. Because of the very decentralized nature, the data that belongs to us stays with us. We get the consent as to whom we want to share that data with. And we don't have to repeatedly keep sharing our data only for it to be stolen from the operational silos that are going to store that data. So this technology basically protects both the consumer, giving us full control and transparency over how our data is used, giving us the ability to delete that data when we no longer wish the enterprise to hold on to that data. And at the same time, for the enterprises, gives them the benefit of the reputational harm and data breach and cyber liability risks that they would normally have to deal with a lot of complex infrastructure and people and process. Well, it gives them the advantage that they no longer need to have that type of investment because they're protected from the possibility of consumer data being stolen because they don't have to store it anymore.
Thank you both so much for sharing your insights and perspective, and thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes, and don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.